Sunday school students, you're dismissed. Today's scripture reading comes from the book of 1 Corinthians, chapter 7, verses 25 to 35. Now about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who is by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, I think that it is good for a man to remain as he is. Are you pledged to a woman? Do not seek to be released. Are you free from such a commitment? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this. What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. Those who mourn, as if they did not. Those who are happy, as if they were not. Those who buy something, as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of the world, as if not engrossed in them. For this world, in its present form, is passing away. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affair, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I am saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way, in undivided devotion to the Lord. This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome back for September, and for those who are back in school, welcome back to school. Yay. Today's topic is about singleness. It's actually a very difficult topic to talk about. It's not one that we often think of the Bible as addressing, but God also has principles for all of us, whether we are single or married, no matter what stage of life you are in, God does have something to say to you. And today's passage is one of those. It's not necessarily about commands, thou shalt do this or not do this. It's more about principles, what to pursue in life, what to chase after in life. The Bible speaks to singles, whether you're a woefully single person, as I was when I was single, desperately longing to be married and struggling with loneliness for many years. There may be some of you here who are happily single. Maybe God has a calling for you to be celibate for the rest of your life, and you are very content with that. And this passage does have words to speak to you as well. Even there are singles in different stages of life. This same sermon I preached at another church, and one of the feedback that came afterwards was the pastor's wife came up to me afterwards and shared how this passage spoke to her as she was recently widowed, as the pastor had passed away just not long before, and after a prolonged illness as well. And she's like, I'm single now for the first time in many, many years in my life, and this passage spoke very truly to me as well. And this passage does speak to the marrieds as well. For those of us who are married, to understand truly what marriage means and what the purpose of marriage is, and then beyond that, what our purpose in life is. This is the purpose of the principles in today. So three sections from today's passage, just to kind of break it down and make it a little bit easier to digest. There's a lot more in this passage, chapter 7 as well as chapter 8, and going back into the earlier sections in 1 Corinthians. So I encourage you in your own Bible to look deeper into today's passage as well as the context. Starting from verse 1, actually, in chapter 7, addresses the married folks. So for the married folks here, we need to focus a little bit earlier. But this section today that we're focusing on is to the singles. First is about contentment, being happy with God's calling for our lives and pursuing that, not pursuing the things of this world, which dovetails into the second section, which is about discontentment in this world, the contentment with God's calling, but discontentment with the things of this world, not being engrossed in the things of this world, whether it's pursuing relationships or career or fame or success in this world or even success for our children. And lastly is about sitting. The lesson is about sitting quietly with God, to have a heart of undivided devotion to God, whether you are single or married. The word translated as virgin here, often in today's passage, I encourage you also to have your Bibles open. The NIV renders it as virgin. The word translated for that, typically in the ancient Greek, referred to young ladies that had never been married, and later on it also applied to the men who had never been married. But we can also think of singles in all walks of life. And this section here, starting from the middle part of things, verse 17 out to verse 30-ish or so, is not necessarily about direct commands from God, but about principles underlying it. So, you know, for single people, I did this too when I was single, praying to ask God, God, what should I do? Do you want me to get married? Do you want me to be single for the rest of my life? If you want me to get married, who should I marry? Right? Some of you may have prospects. Who should I choose from these prospects? I had zero prospects. Zero. So it was like, I need some prospects if I'm going to get married. Where do I find them? how do I find my wife? For some of you, maybe you already have somebody in mind and you're praying to ask God, is this the one? Is this the one, God? Do you want me to thumbs up, thumbs down? And God sometimes may answer very clearly. He may give you a dream or speak to you in audible words. He may say, yep, this is what you're going to do. A versus B, thumbs up, thumbs down. Not always, though. Oftentimes, God won't give you a straight answer, like the kind of answer that you're expecting, thumbs up, thumbs down. So then what do we do? What am I supposed to do if God doesn't reply to my prayer? Does that mean I just need to try hardest for myself? Well, today's passage is to remind us there are principles underlying. Even if it's not a direct command, there are principles underneath that underpin all of our life, whether you're single, married, whatever, that underpin our life. And those are the principles that we are to follow. And so here Paul is speaking not as God's command, giving God's command, but giving counsel. So Paul is a pastor, a trusted and respected pastor, and according to the wisdom of the Holy Spirit granted in Paul, this is his advice that he's giving. And as much as young people may be seeking advice and counsel, and they ask a pastor or an elder or a teacher or a mentor and say, I don't know what to do. I'm in this stage of life. I don't know where God is calling for me. What do you think? And the mentor may say, well, I don't have a specific word, but I have some advice to give you, some principles to underlie. I know when I was single, there was a point at which I was really stressed out about it, really like desperately desiring to be married. And there was a prayer meeting at church. There was another church. And after prayer meeting, I was just so broken. And the pastor there, he was an interim pastor. He noticed and he said, hey, is everything okay? And I said, no, not everything is okay. I really want to be married and I have zero prospects, nothing out there. And so he was just like, well, can we just pray, right? Just pray. And I still remember to this day that prayer. It was an act of compassion and an encouragement to me. And so this is today's passage. Read today's passage, and I encourage you also in your own Bible to read and reread it as a word of compassion and encouragement. Whether you are single or not, God sees you where you are. And this passage reminds us that the world is coming to a close, that there is an imminence and an urgency to our lives, that it's not just like, well, I'm just spinning in circles and I don't know, my life is in a rut and in a dead end and it's always going to be like this and I have zero prospects and it's always going to be like this. No, because the world is coming to a close very soon. The word for crisis here means being confined in a narrow space, being constrained, not being free to go about. And the word for present actually means standing. It's not a typical word for present, for like imminent or whatever. It means standing in it. We are right now in this crisis, in this being confined. Why? Because the world is coming to a close. Because God knows that the world is going downhill and getting worse and worse. The inclination of people's hearts is becoming more and more selfish, as we see in our world, in our society, in our country, redefining what marriage means, redefining what singleness, the purpose of singleness is. And so there's increasing immorality and selfishness in our world, and God sees that, and Jesus is coming again soon to bring a final judgment to this world. That's the crisis we're in. The time is short. And if I think of it in these terms, oh my goodness, I don't know when Jesus is going to come again soon. It's not just about when I'm going to die and see Jesus. When is Jesus going to come and all people on earth are going to see him? And all my friends and relatives and my loved ones, those who know Jesus and those who don't know Jesus, they will all see Jesus come and see his judgment. Then what am I going to do with my life? with this time that God has given to me, these hours, these days, these years, this stage of my life. It's not just about waiting until I level up to the next level of life, whether that level is a relationship or marriage or having a kid or a certain career path or whatever, waiting until my life begins. My life is already happening right now, and it's in a crisis. Not just because of the stress that I go through in my life. The world is in a crisis because the world desperately needs to hear the gospel truth of Jesus Christ. The world needs to see his love. And we have access to that love. Even if you're not in a relationship, you're not married, you have love because you have God's love. And this is what drives us, what propels us. And this is why Paul says it's okay to be single. If you're not married, if you're not attached, it's good to remain as you are. Remember, Paul himself never got married. John the Baptist never got married. Jesus never got married. Plenty of people, Old Testament prophets in the Bible, never got married, and God used them powerfully. There are also prophets that did get married, and marriage is a good thing, is a blessing as well. The beginning part of today's passage talks a little bit more about the purpose of marriage. But if you're not married, that's also a good thing to be. That's a good station in life to have, as Pastor Dave prayed in the first service. Do not be looking for a wife. When I was single, I read this verse and I was like, no. No. I really wanted a wife. I really, really needed that. Loneliness was really it was big. It was very heavy on my heart. And I was looking for a wife. I was really I would go to large churches and hope that the numbers would be better, right? I used to live in, it's true. It's not a good thing, but it's what I did, right? So it's history. I was living in the States for a while in North Carolina. In North Carolina there, it's kind of more a rural area. It's an academic community. There were two major Chinese churches in the area. And so if you think of Chinese, which, I mean, it's kind of my own preference, right? My limitation, right? And then Christian, right? That narrows the field even more. And then of eligible age within the right range, the radius of age, right? A few years below, a few more years above, something like that range, right? And so I was looking, and the pickings were very slim. And it's what they say about parking spaces, all the good ones are either taken or handicapped, right? Oh, sorry. But God, fortunately, was very gracious to me. He gave me the best wife. But I honestly thought that if I came to Vancouver, more people, more Chinese, more Christian Chinese of eligible age range, the numbers were better, the odds were in my favor, right? And it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. It doesn't come to me by my striving, by my eager desire, right? And it just forced it to happen. Do not look for a wife. Why? Because at that point in my life, when I was single, this was what was consuming my every waking thought. I was like, oh, I really need to be married. I just want to be married. And once I'm married, everything is going to be fine. Married people? Is that what happens? Yeah. No. Yeah. The smart husbands, no comment. My mommy always said to the single people, don't get married in order to solve your problems. Because when you get married, your problems don't disappear. They're still there. And now you have to care for your spouse who has his or her own problems. And you have relationship issues. You have three times the problems. So getting married gives you more problems, not fewer problems. It is simpler to be single. Marriage has so much joy with it. And I need to be clear, because there was a comment after first service that misunderstood this. So I need to be clear that I have a lot of joy and a lot of thankfulness to God for God bringing to me the very best wife. What she is the best thing for me, better than I would have chosen for myself, is God choosing for me. And he really did. We've shared our story before. We weren't on each other's radar. In fact, she's not my type and I'm not her type either, right? And God knew what our type really was, and God had a better plan in store for us, and he spoke to each one of our hearts very persistently, insistently, consistently, saying, yep, this is what you need to do. You need to love each other. You need to be married, and this is a calling for you. So that was our story and why our dating period was about 6 weeks or so of dating. So we were friends in a small group. We knew each other, and then God was moving on our hearts, and so we started to turn toward that call. But when we started officially dating to when engagement, right? So from when we officially started dating to when I popped the question was 6 weeks. It would have been 4 weeks, but I had to wait for the ring to come in the mail. So it was a mail order, yeah. So like, yeah, so it was really cheap. So it was because it was in obedience to God's call. It was God's calling. It was very clear. So actually, when we started officially dating, in both our minds, we were like, yeah, we know this is God's calling for us. This is what we need to do. We need to walk through this door, and with joy as well. I mean, as I had been longing for a wife for a very long time, so I was very thankful. I shared with first service our wedding photos. I'm smiling in all our wedding photos because I know that I'm on camera, right? So I know that these photos are going to be with us for the rest of our life, so I need to smile, right? But I was like not really thinking so much about, I was worried about the ceremony and not thinking about afterwards, like the lifetime of marriage commitment. And my wife was not smiling. Like, she smiled when she walked down the aisle because she saw all her old friends from far away. She wasn't looking at me, she was looking at her friends. But then when she's all the photos, when she's up here, she's not smiling. She's freaked out. She's like super scared. That's what she said afterwards. She's like, so scared. Just like, oh my goodness, like marriage is a big deal. Like, this is a huge commitment. And so she understood that. I maybe didn't, not really ready for marriage. Always wanting to get married and not really realizing what is involved, like what it takes. And you're never ready. You're just not ready at all for marriage and the commitment for a lifetime. So this is a bit of a segue, a little bit of a tangent here, but my wife reminded me after between services, in talking about singleness, we do need to talk a little bit about marriage and about God's expectations or his definition of marriage. So there's a lot more. For instance, the first bit of today's chapter from verses 2 to 4 in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, the beginning part of it, the married folks, especially even the singles, if you're thinking of marriage, you can look to that. The purpose of marriage, it's not to satisfy my loneliness. That was what I missed when I was single. I didn't understand that. It was all about fulfilling my needs. That's not the reason to get married. The purpose of marriage, and marriage is a good thing, is a blessing. The purpose is a testimony. It's a testimony of God's power. There's a verses 2 to 4 talks about purity, duty, and authority. It's a testimony of purity in this world of rampant immorality, that we have purity and holiness and something that we treasure and protect at all costs. And that's the sanctity of marriage. And it's about duty, serving one another out of marital duty. So even if you don't feel like it, even if you're not happily, crazily in love every day, of course, I'm crazily in love with my wife head over heels every day, but hypothetically, not every day you're not like that. You're not always feeling that. And having that duty of serving, even if you don't always feel like it, it's out of obligation to God, because of what God has done for us. And authority, mutual submission, not just the husband's right and might, but submitting to one another out of reverence to Christ. These three things, purity, duty, and authority, are the testimony of marriage. It's why God established marriage, to be a testimony reflecting God's own covenant love for us. That's why God calls us into marriage, and for those of you who are married or those of you who will be married, God calls that for a purpose, not to satisfy my needs or desires, but to testify to his glory, his covenant love. And this is why marriage is a good thing, is a good blessing. But if you're not married, that is a good thing as well. Being single also gives you certain freedom, freedom to be undivided in your attention to God. Do not seek after marriage. Your ultimate goal in life is not about marriage. It's about pursuing God's will. So continuing in today's passage, each person should live as a believer. Walk in your circles of life. You should walk your daily habits in whatever situation the Lord has assigned or apportioned, like a big bowl of soup and you're ladling out bits of soup to each of the different bowls. God also apportions out to each one of us a station in life, for a period of life, for a number of years, for this stage of life, this is where God has you. And for some of you, God has you being singles right now. This is your station in life right now, for this stage. And it's a good thing. It's a good stage of life to be in. And there, I know there are also some that are single after having a long marriage or after having different experiences. And that is also a situation, a station in life that God has you in. And this is where God has you right now. Don't just be waiting for someday, right now, today, where you are right now. God has you walking in the ruts of your life, in the circles of your life, in God's calling, just as God has called you. Little kids, when they're playing with one toy and they see another kid playing with a different toy, they want that toy. I want that toy. My son, just last night, we took him to London Drugs, and he just saw a box of Legos, like Star Wars Legos. It's got like 50 pieces of little tiny Legos, and it costs $20. I'm like, wow. And he wants it. And I'm like, at home, you have so many Legos, I cannot walk on the carpet because there are so many Legos around. But he's like, but that doesn't count. This is a new Lego. I want the new Lego. The new Lego will make me happy. And he's bargaining with us. He's like, if you give me this Lego, then I won't ask for more toys for the next 2 days or something like that, right? Like, you know, bargaining and stuff. This will satisfy me. This will make me happy so I won't need any more. And we laugh at little kids. We adults do the same thing. I'm not happy with my life right now. Maybe if I fix this one thing, if I change my circumstance, that will save me. That will make things happy. Maybe it's this city, you know, Vancouver, the Lower Mainland. Oh, man, it chews people up. This is a bad city. If I just move, if I run away, if I move to Ireland, I go to Australia, I go somewhere else, oh, then I'll finally be happy, right? Maybe it's like because I'm single and I need to be in a relationship, maybe once I have a boyfriend or girlfriend, then I'll finally be happy. That will fix my life. Nope, it doesn't work like that. And many young people struggling to find their own self-identity, and especially in Canada, in our society nowadays, changing their orientation, sexual orientation, or sexual identity because they're not happy with who they are and they're trying to find who they are. And feeling like, well, if I fix this one thing, if I change this, that will fix my life. And trying to change all these circumstances, but not realizing what really satisfies me, what I really need, is God's love. Young people searching for love, this is what we need, God's love, not human love, not self-love, but God's love. That's what we desperately desire. And this is the secret to contentment, knowing that if I have God's love, if I have Jesus with me, I have everything I need. Even if it's just me, myself, and I come home from work, I'm so tired, I open the door, hello, and it just like echoes, hello, 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 hello. There's nobody there, right? I know that. I was in that stage of life as well. But if I have God's love, it's enough. This is God's calling for my life. And this is also a calling that guides me into moves me forward, propels me forward. This gives me something to a command to obey. This is not just about sitting and waiting for God to fulfill my need. This is about active obedience to do what God has called me to do. This is not about laziness. Contentment is not laziness, but this is about keeping God's commands. Verse 19, for instance, emphasizes this, that we need to keep God's commands and fulfill our obligation, our duty to him. This is not necessarily to say that if we are in an abusive environment, we need to remain in that abusive environment and stay there. This is about God's calling for us. If I'm in a stressful and difficult situation, what does God want me to do? What does God want me to do about this? How does God want me to respond, whether to fight or to run or to change my own attitude, my words back, or to seek help? What am I supposed to do? I have to seek after God's calling for my life in this situation right now. But it's not a change of circumstance that's going to fix my life. It's a pursuit of God that's going to fix my life. Each person in their own calling to remain in that situation. So the first question is for all of us, even those of us who are married, am I satisfied with my life? Am I happy? Am I satisfied with my life? Oftentimes we are satisfied and happy with our lives simply because we are not pursuing God's calling and we're pursuing the world's success. And the world tells us that we are happy and successful. If I work hard at my school and I get good grades, then the teachers tell me you're doing well. You're a good person. I'm okay. If I work hard at my work and I get a promotion, then the world tells me you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Life is smooth. I have money, I can play, I can take vacations, then everything is okay. But this is not true happiness. That's not true joy. Just to work hard, earn money, spend money, and play, get old, and die, and become worm food, and that's your life? No. No, you are so much more than that. God created you as a human being, a spirit, a soul. You are not a machine. You are not an animal. You're not just there as a human resource. We use this term, right, in the working world, as a human resource to be chewed up by the company. You give your life in exchange for money, and then you give your money in exchange for trying to get life back again, and you don't get it. You can't get that youth back again. What do we need to pursue in life? It's not just about happiness, indulgence of my own desires. I need to pursue God's calling. God, you made me. What do you want me to do? What is your calling, your purpose for my life? And this passage reminds us again and again to pursue God's calling, to be obedient to Him, to understand His love, to know what love truly is, not just finding a change in circumstance. We live in this world, and so there are certain necessities, physical basic necessities of this world. You need to have a job. You need to work hard in school because you need to get a job, because you need to earn money, because you don't want to be on the street and like begging for scraps and stuff. You don't want to be dependent on other people being a drain on society. You want to be a contributor so that you can then provide generously to others. So yeah, you need to kind of do this stuff basically. But knowing that success of the world is not what drives us. A promotion or getting more money, it's not what propels us. That's not our purpose in life. We live in this world, but all of our relationships, even our emotions, as well as our finances, all of these subordinate to God's calling. Why? Because Jesus is coming again soon. He is coming as a righteous judge, and He knows what's going on inside of our hearts. He knows the intents and the thoughts of our minds, and so He can judge with righteousness and truth, but also with grace and mercy. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short, cut short, wrapped up. You thought there would be a longer time. Nope, actually, it's less time than that. And this is the parable, these are the parables that Jesus repeatedly tells in the Gospels of the rich people that think that we have a long time. And so maybe for the young people that are woefully single, that want to be married and feeling like your life is dragging on and it's just not happening and you're getting old. When I hit 30, I didn't get married before I was 30, it was after. So when I hit 30, the big 30, and I was still like zero prospects, I was like, oh my goodness. Like, you know, from 10 to 20, when you're 10 years old to 20 years old, it's fun, right? From 20 to 30, like, it's also fun because you have, like, freedom. You're an adult now, so you can, some of us have gainful employment or something, right? So, you know, I work at McDonald's. I have my, $10 an hour, so I can spend that money. And then once you hit the 30, you're like, oh, like, next is 40. That's, like, old, right? Like, old, right? And so I was like, oh, no. Like, my life is going on, like, and, like, nothing is happening in my life. My life is not moving forward. All my friends are, like, moving on and getting married and having kids and stuff, and I'm, like, stuck, right? Like, just like I'm stuck back as like an adolescent. And the Bible reminds us, no, you're not. You're not stuck because the time is marching onward. You think that your life is like just going on and on and on forever and it's not proceeding, but the time is going to be cut short very soon because the time of Jesus coming is imminent. Any day now. It could be tonight or tomorrow or next year, 10 years. It could be 50 years from now. But we don't know when Jesus is coming again soon. We only know it is soon. It is short. And in light of that, that should sharpen my focus. Help me to remind me that every hour of my life is precious. God gave this to me. It's not just me sitting here waiting. When will my prince, my knight in shining armor come? And I'm just waiting and waiting. No, now this time is precious. The clock is ticking. Jesus is coming again soon. The world is dying without Christ. And we have the gift of the gospel of Christ, this precious message that God has entrusted to us to share with the world around us. We have Christ's love to share to the MSI slides with the smiling, happy kids. Remember that story of Simon was his name, right? The kid, the little boy that never smiled, and then like he smiled because of a girl, obviously, right? He smiled, right? He started smiling. So we have something even greater, God's love, that can bring a smile to children's face to let them see this new hope and new life and truth that comes from Jesus Christ alone. And we have this, and we can share it with the world, and the clock is ticking. The time is short. This is what propels us. Young people, old, singles, married, all of us. This is our purpose in life, an urgency to share the gospel. So from now on, in light of the shortness of the time, from now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. This does not mean, husbands, that we should just be like, go to the bar all the time and play bowling and go out with the guys and stuff and just forget the wife and stuff, right? Just like live as though you're single, right? Yeah. There was a few times when early on when we were married, when my wife took a trip with her, I think one time she took her mother to Europe. So it was a week when, this is before our son was born, it was a week when I was just home alone. I was like, single life, yay! And then after like 3 days, I was like, I'm hungry. Like, my cooking sucks. It's like, oh, it's so lonely at home. It's like, oh, I miss my wife. And so, like, yeah. So that's not what this verse means. It doesn't mean like free single life and stuff. What this means is that even my relationships, even my marriage needs to be subordinate to God's calling. I love my wife very dearly. I know you husbands love your wives very, very dearly as well. We should love God even more than that. Even more than that. And if God should take away somebody precious to us, as has happened, I know, in some families here in our church, as you should know, has happened to Old Testament prophets, Ezekiel. It happened to him. God told him, Ezekiel, that in one blow he would take away the delight of his eyes. And he spoke to the people, and that evening his wife died. God can take away our precious loved ones because they are gifts from God in the first place. They belong to God. God has that authority to take them away according to his grand design. And if I know that my relationship with my wife is smaller than, subordinate to, my relationship with God, then if God should do that, if God should take that precious person away from me in my life, I still have trust that God knows what he's doing. I still have my root, my foundation, my firm stance that I can trust in God and trust in his love. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not, knowing that this life and even marriage is temporary. Marriage is a lifetime, right? Seems forever. No, a lifetime is so short, is so temporary. Jesus himself in the Gospels, he said, anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Son or daughter, same thing. This is so hard for us Chinese and Phil Chai to understand, right? It's hard for us because in the Chinese mindset, family is king. Family is number one. Your filial piety is everything. Family, you need to respect your elders and take care of your family. The Western civilization, oftentimes kids, when they reach 18 or 20 and stuff, the parents just kick them out. Okay, you're on your own. You need to pay for college? Get a job. You know, like you need to buy a house? Get another job. You know, like, you know, do your own thing. I'm not going to support you. I need to watch out for myself. And we Chinese don't do that, right? We Chinese are like, when the kids are grown, we provide for them. We pay for their tuition. We buy them a house if we can and stuff, right? And the implication is that when we get old and our kids are successful in earning money, then now, okay, now it's the other turn, right? Now it's now their turn to provide for us. That's how we Chinese operate, right? And it's not necessarily a right or wrong thing, but family is so important to us in our culture. And it should be. Family is important. It's a gift from God. As I said, marriage is a testimony to God's covenant love. However, our love for God needs to be even greater. This is not easy. This is not saying that you need to hate your family. It means you need to love your family just as you're doing right now and love God even more, okay? And love God first and pursue Christ's love. And as I understand what it means for Christ to love me and for me to love him, now it helps me to understand how to love my family members rightly, properly, with real love. So many young people in a twisted relationship will say to each other, if you loved me, you would do this for me. If you really love me, you would buy this for me. You would get this for me. You would sacrifice this for me. Oh, you're not doing this. Oh, you don't really love me. That's manipulation. That's not love. That's possession, control, to try to use love or the idea of love as an instrument, as a weapon to influence others, to coerce them, to bend to my will. That's selfish. This is not love. It's quite the opposite. To know what love really is, I have to go back to God's love. I have to understand the self-sacrificial love of the Father that sent his only Son to earth to die, even though Jesus did not deserve death. He died to demonstrate this is what love is, to cleanse us from our sin, our rebellion against God. That's what love takes. And if I have that love, that equips me to love my family, my father and mother, my children, to love them truly with powerful, consistent love, love that carries on for decades. Love that does not just drain me until I'm empty. Love that fills me up because I know I'm supplied with God's love. This is the love that we must pursue. And this is why our relationships are subordinate to God's will, underneath our love for God. Our emotions also. So relationships, emotions, and finances. Second one is emotions. God gave us emotions. They were a good thing. They're a blessing from God. But they can also sometimes lead us astray. When we're in the throes of emotion, we succumb to sinful nature. Those who mourn as if they did not mourn because of the imminence of the time being cut short. My son recently for school, you know, starting back into school, we're homeschooling, but in collaboration with the local neighborhood school, and they sent him homework for him to write up a few things like, what are my strengths? What do I enjoy doing? And one of the questions is, when I am stressed, dot, 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 what do I do when I am stressed? And I think he knows what he's going to write, but he hasn't written it yet. But I was like, that's a really good question. That's a good question for adults as well. When I am stressed, how do I respond? What is self-reflection? What is my natural state? When I'm stressed because of, like, family issues, sometimes I'll dive into work. I'll just, like, ignore family and just dive into work and just work really, really hard, and maybe I can gain some satisfaction from doing a good job in my work, even though my family relationships are kind of messed up and stuff. How do I deal with stress? When I have a stressful issue at work, do I then vent on my family members? My boss yells at me. I cannot yell back at him. So I yell at somebody who cannot yell back at me, at somebody who's smaller than I am. How do I deal with stress? How do I handle this? When I'm, the word here for mourn means crying. When I am sorrowful, when I'm just overwhelmed, it's just too much for me to handle. What do I turn to? Do I turn to something that switches off my brain so it numbs the pain? I don't feel anything. I'm just temporarily high and happy, and I know it's not a real solution, but at least I'm not feeling the pain. Is that how I react to stress? Our emotions are good things, but how we react to these emotions reveals something about our priorities in our heart, and it reveals what our faith is. Even happiness. When I have a success, a victory in some small sense, something that finally went our way, a plan that we had and it was carried out and it was successful, how do I respond to that when I'm happy? Do I go out and spend money? Is that what I do naturally when I'm happy? Just spend money. Like, the more expensive something is, the happier it must be. When I finished my PhD dissertation, I didn't actually walk yet. I hadn't walked across the stage yet. But I had signatures on the line from each of my advisors. So I was like, yes, I'm finally done. I had worked on my thesis for so long, just like pounding out words and words and words, and nobody cares about these words. PhD means that you become the world expert in a field that's so narrow that nobody cares about it. So, like, I finally finished my thesis. And then I was like, yes, celebrate. But I was by myself. I was single. So I had nobody to celebrate with. So what did I do? I was just like, well, I'd go to an expensive restaurant. And I had an $80 meal. This is like a long time ago. This is decades ago. And I had an $80 US dollar meal for just one person for myself. Because I was like, I need to celebrate somehow. And I don't know how. So I'm just going to spend money. That must make me happy somehow, right? What do I do when I'm happy? My response to my emotions. Remember the passage in James chapter 5. We had a series going through the book of James, talking in the last bit in chapter 5, talked about prayer. Is anyone in trouble? Our response should not be to yell in anger or to run away and hide. It should be to pray. Dedicate this to God. Is anyone happy when I'm rejoicing? Sing psalms, songs of praise. A psalm is a short chorus focusing on God's glory and God's mercy. Do I do that? I don't, to be honest. I don't. That's not my instinctive, natural response to sorrow or to happiness. But this is what the Bible reminds us of. My emotions need to be subordinate to God. My relationships, my emotions, and then my finances also need to be subordinate to God. Marriage brings stress. I got into trouble for saying this in the first service. There was somebody after service that said, are you okay? Like, you know, are you and Maggie okay? Like, you know, is it like you have so much stress in your marriage that Sean needs to vent while he's at the pulpit? Like, nope, that's not what's going on. That's not okay. There is stress in our marriage. There is stress in every marriage. And if there is no stress in the marriage, that probably means you are the person causing stress. So you should ask your spouse, okay? Like, yeah. And if we are truly pursuing God's calling for our relationships and for our marriages, it's gonna be tough. Why? Because I'm sinful. I'm selfish. I'm bitter and angry. And I bring all this to the table, to our relationship. And if our relationship is to be a testimony of God's covenant love, I need to work on that. I need to put to death whatever remains of my sinful nature. And putting things to death is not easy. It's stressful. It's difficult. I'm just talking about myself. I'm not complaining about my wife. Just me, myself. I have so much that I need to work on. And for some of us, especially those of us who live in relative luxury, we are here in Canada, we have opportunities for education and for work, money is okay. We have enough to get by. We're not in a stressful situation financially, and so things are okay. Maybe I and my wife, we can just do our own separate things. She has her own business, I have my own business. Our money is not in a stressful situation or anything like that. So we're okay. We think that our marriage is happy. Actually, we're just roommates. That just means that we're just each doing our own thing. We're not really married then. We're just being roommates. But when stress arrives, whether it's financial stress, loss or change of a job, or suddenly something threatens our income revenue, or we had an investment that went sour. Maybe it's family stress when you have a newborn baby. Oh, it is stressful. Yes, yes. At all hours, that baby is, wah! It's like piercing, and it's meant to be. That's by design. The baby has some urgent need, and they need to communicate that, and they cannot use words, so they use, right? Like, oh, it's stressful. And when that stress arrives, whatever fractures there were in our relationship now become grand canyons, now become these great rifts. And we used to think everything's fine. Our marriage is fine. That's because we didn't endure that stress. That's because we weren't under that stress. But if we are pursuing God's will and God's calling for our relationship, that means putting to death sinful nature, which means stress, which means difficulty. And this includes things like financial issues, financial stress. Sometimes a differing opinion or a different value system, an approach to money. One person is the breadwinner, who earns the money, the other person spends the money, right? And sometimes that can result in bitterness. Why am I working so hard to be the breadwinner? I'm bringing all the money. What are you doing? You're just spending money. You're just a deadweight. It brings a rift. It brings conflict. Sometimes I'm willing to splurge a little bit on this one thing. When traveling, I want to stay at a 5-star hotel. That's just me. I'm accustomed to that, and I'm willing to spend more on a hotel, and I don't want to spend that much money on food, right? So I would rather spend less money on food and more money on a hotel, whatever our priorities are. Not necessarily that one is right or the other is wrong, but there are different values and priorities. And money, it's not necessarily inherently evil. Money is a stand-in, a substitute for our values. What I think as important. What are the things that are important to me in life? That is represented by what am I willing to spend money on, or time, or energy, or my intellect, or my talent on. What do I spend money on represents my priorities and values in life. Young people, if you're thinking of getting married, we've done a little bit of premarital counseling before. This is one of the things for young couples who are thinking of getting married to talk about. What are you willing to spend money on? What are the things where you want to spend money and where you don't want to spend money? Just like planning for the wedding, right? A wedding is very expensive. You got to save somewhere. So what do you want to save? For us, my wife didn't care about flowers. And so she's just like, spend the bare minimum on flowers. They're going to die tomorrow anyways. Right? So whatever it is, this is priorities, right? Our value system. And in all these things, the biblical principle is that what we buy is not really mine. Now, I paid for it with my money. I earned that money with my job. I have my job with my intellect, but all of that comes from God. This thing that I bought comes from God. The money comes from God. The job comes from God. The intellect and the strength to carry out my job comes from God. Everything I have, my very life, belongs to God. So everything that I buy is not my own to keep. This is not mine. My money. You earn your money. You can spend whatever you want with your money. I earn this money fair and square so I can spend it on whatever I want. No. No, this money belongs to God. This is because our life on this earth is just temporary. Just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Why should I spend so much of my energy on things that will disappear very temporarily? We use the things of this world. We live in this world. You need to have a job. You need to earn money. You need to buy, you need to have at least a place to live. Even if you're not buying a house, you need to have a place to live of some sort, even a tent. But we are not engrossed or consumed by the things of this world. The people of this world chase after success, after education, after material success and wealth and admiration, and we must not pursue these things. This is not your goal in life. You are not consumed by this because all of this is passing away. The world and its form, the word for form is schema. It's a pattern. It's a habits, values, priorities. The values of this world are passing away. They are very fleeting. Do not be consumed by the things of this world. Instead, submit relationships, emotions, and finances to God's authority. Married people, we still need to do this. It's even more urgent because we have another person who is depending on us. We need to together submit these things to God. Singles, you need to work on this right now before you get married, because once you get married, it's a lot more complicated. Right now, when it's just you by yourself, submit your relationships, emotions, and finances to God's authority. Your goal in life is not to get married. That is not the purpose for you being here on earth. Your goal in life is to understand God's love, to experience His love, and to love Him and share His love with others. So your goal is about love, not necessarily about marriage. And if and when God calls you to walk through that door into marriage, your purpose in entering into marriage is not to satisfy your own selfish needs, but it's to be a testimony of God's covenant love toward us. And so the same way for emotions. I need to move on a little faster. I'm sorry. Emotions and as well as finances. The last section here is an encouragement for all of us, single or married, of undivided devotion to God. And it draws a distinction between those who are single and those who are married. Remember, Paul never got married in this life, but he understood through God's wisdom what marriage involves. Those who marry will face many troubles. Many troubles. This is not just about things being more complicated. The word translated as trouble flips this here means a suffering, means an enduring, patiently enduring with something that is potentially an external stress. Sometimes it means an internal turmoil. This is a suffering. This is something which brings us tears, heartache. And marriage, true marriage, according to God's plan, will bring you heartache as well. Again, not because of the other person, because of sin in my own heart. Because when I am married, now I realize how sinful I truly am. When I was single, I could fool myself into thinking I am a holy person. I go to church, I read the Bible and pray, I serve God. Meh. I mean, I check all the boxes. I'm a good Christian. I should be okay. Once I got married, I realized, oh, no, I have so much I need to work on. I'm selfish. I am bitter and angry, condescending and proud. I have so much that I need to work on, and I didn't even realize it because I wasn't in a relationship, something that could give me a mirror, right? It's not that my wife is accusing me. It's not that my wife is criticizing me or anything. When I am in a relationship, it reveals in myself all of this crud that I need to work on, all of the sin that I need to put to death. This is the trouble that we face when we are in a marriage. And I also have obligations. I have an obligation to serve my wife, to take care of her, to provide God's love to her, covenant love, just as Christ has loved us. And so marriage involves stress. It involves trouble. There is concern here or worry or burden here. And the singles, you don't have to deal with that. Well, not to the same extent. You still need to deal with putting to death sinful nature in yourself, but you don't have that additional burden of caring for another person, of wanting to have anxiety for another person. And so our attentions are divided. A married man is concerned about two things: the affairs of God, as well as the affairs of this world. In other words, how he can please his wife. Husbands, you do need to keep your wife happy. Happy wife, happy life. Very true. Still true, right? The Bible also says so. Yep, we have an obligation, need to keep the wife happy. It's very true. I cannot just say, wife, forget you. I'm serving God, forget you, right? Nope. If I'm truly serving God, I also need to serve my wife. I also need to keep her happy. This is a part of obligation, part of what, when I said, yes, I do on the stage, yeah, that's also what I'm saying I do too. I know you didn't realize it at the time. I did not either, but we're in it now. This is my commitment now. And so we need to rise to the challenge, men, right? Especially men, we need to rise to this challenge. Married women as well also have an obligation in order to serve. That voluntary submission to the husband out of reverence for Christ is super, super difficult. This is not easy by any means. If anything, it probably is harder than the calling that God has for husbands. But yet, this is also God's calling for us in marriage, the married life. Ephesians 5, for instance, the husband needs to love the wife as Christ loved the church and sacrificed, and then the wife needs to serve, to submit to the husband. It's not easy. This is why our interests are divided. Our heart is split between serving God and also serving our spouse. The unmarried are a little bit freer. The singles can have undivided attention to God. This doesn't mean undivided devotion to yourself, to your own goals, your own dreams or desires. This doesn't mean you can do whatever you want to do. This means you are free to serve God completely, whatever God asks you to do. And it addresses both the men, the unmarried men, as well as the unmarried women. For the unmarried woman, her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in both body as well as spirit. Body representing our practical daily life, our actions, putting faith into action, not just speaking it with words, but doing it, living it out in obedience to God. And our spirit represents our heart, our purpose, or our focus in being devoted to God. When I was at, I shared a story in first service about when I was single and I went to Mount Baker. This is, wow, oh, this is a long time ago. This is, we've been married now for 10 years, so it was at least 10 years ago. It was more than 10 years ago. It was after church one Sunday, and all my friends, for whatever reason, had lunch plans already. So I was asking each one of my buddies, it's like, hey, do you want to grab lunch somewhere? It's like, no, sorry, you know, I got plans. Oh, sorry, I got plans. Like, you know, one of my my buddies was like, no, I have to go be with my parents. And another buddy was like, no, I have a date. And I was like, okay, I have no dates, no prospects, yeah, nothing. And so eventually, like, all of my friends went away, and then church, like, the lights started going out, and the janitor was locking up, and it was just me just sitting there by myself. It was like, nobody to go to lunch with. Oh. So I was like, okay, I'll just grab lunch by myself. I have my car, at least, my beloved car. So I went and I grabbed takeout lunch, and then I was just like, what do I do now? So I, like, saw off in the distance, hey, there's Mount Baker. I want to go there. So I did. So I just took off and I drove like 3-4 hours to Mount Baker and 4 hours back, and I was running on fumes. I ran out of gas, nearly ran out of gas at the top of the hill, at the top of the mountain. So I was like, I can coast down. It was fun. I mean, I spent a bit of time there, took photos and prayed and rested for a bit there on Mount Baker, picture lake and all that stuff. We went back to Mount Baker just past weekend, my family and I. So my wife and our son, 6-year-old son, and myself, and it was the first time in over 10 years that I'd been up to the top of Mount Baker, to the ski area, right? So we went up there and we had a lot of fun. I was like, oh yeah, I remember where I was when I was single, reminiscing and stuff. And I realized when I was single, I could just decide, I see a mountain, I'm gonna go. And I did it. And I came back home. It was like 11 by the time I got back home, but I did it. When we're a family, it's not so easy. For us, our family, to do this Mount Baker trip involved like 2 months of planning, like so much research work, internet work, finding a place to stay and stuff, because we had to stay overnight because of our kid and all this stuff. So like, it was a very complex, involved process just to get us to go up to Mount Baker. You single people have a lot freer of a life. A lot more single. The single you are, the more simple you are, the more simple your life is. It's less complicated. It's not necessarily happier, and it's not necessarily less happy, but it is simpler to be single. And you can just decide, I'm just going to go somewhere. Just follow there. One of our friends in another church is single, woefully single. She does not desire to be single. She actually was engaged briefly for a time to a non-Christian. And when she realized the commitment involved in marriage, and her boyfriend, her fiancé, realized the commitment involved in being a Christian, he said no. And so their relationship, they parted ways. It was a difficult time for her, but in that time she grew closer to God and reliant on God. It was a long time ago, and she is still single now. Not what you would call like the typical single age range, so she's kind of grown beyond that age range now, and still wanting to become married, but she has a certain freedom that married people do not. She has literally taken the globe and spun it around and said, I'm going to go there and share the gospel. And she did. She's been all over the world. She's been just last year in Madagascar. I don't know what Madagascar looks like. Like, she just, like, because that was where the globe landed, right? And she just went there and stuff. You can do that as a single person. You cannot when you are married. This is not freedom for me to indulge in my own sinful nature, just for me to pursue my own desires. This is freedom to be devoted to God in both body as well as spirit, to devote all of my time and my attention to God, to be obedient to him. We must live as people who are free, but our freedom is not to be used to cover up evil. Our freedom is not to be used to indulge in our own selfish desires, that I'm single and I'm free so I can do whatever I want to do. Instead, use your freedom as servants of God. Single people, right now you are in a precious stage of life. This is very important, and it's short, because our life is short. It's only a few years. Our whole time on earth before Christ comes is so very short and precious. And your single period right now, for you singles, this time of your life right now, is to be used to be serving God. This doesn't just mean church work, although yes, it involves church service as well. It means dedicating your heart to God. It can simply be saying, God, what do you want me to work on? Just as I shared before, I was not even realizing, cognizant of my own failings, my own character flaws, and God was always nudging me, saying, hey, Sean, you need to work on these things. Singles, you need to work on those character issues right now before you are in a relationship. Paul is not saying this to give an additional burden, not to word for restrict means to giving a heavy burden. The point here is not to lay additional work, additional burden on us. It's to, in order to encourage us that we might live in a right or a proper or pleasing way in undivided devotion to the Lord. The word for undivided here actually comes from drawing out a sword. A sword from its scabbard was drawn out, and so it was disconnected from its scabbard. And to be undivided means that we're not drawn away from God, not distracted away from our focus, our purpose in life. God made you. He loves you. He has a purpose for your life. To understand His love, to experience that, and to love Him and share that love with others, whether it's in marriage or outside of marriage, whatever sort of relationships God has for you in your life right now, to be undrawn out, undistracted from your focus on God. And the word for devotion here, the root word for this, actually means sit. To sit. To be undivided in your sitting before God. To sit as opposed to walking around restlessly, aimlessly, dissatisfied with where I am in life, as I was when I was single and woefully single. I was walking around. I was restless. I was trying out different things and serving in lots of different churches. I was a part of like 4 small groups at one point because I was just like trying to serve and trying to be busy so that I wouldn't have time to think about my own loneliness, right? And I was restless, walking around, doing all these things instead of just sitting. Sit with God. Remember the story of Mary and Martha, where Martha was very busy doing all these things, serving God, serving Jesus. It's a good thing to serve, but Jesus commended Mary because she was sitting. And for you single people, maybe right now this is what God has for you, just to sit with Him, close to Jesus, to experience His love. To sit quietly with Him, to dwell on His word, and to hear His love for you, to experience that, to let His love for you fill your hearts, to know that if you have God's love, it's enough. It is. This is what satisfies me. Another human being's love will never satisfy. If you are desperately lonely and wanting that hole to be filled in your heart, you cannot place that burden on another human being. It's too much. It's asking too much of your spouse. They have their own needs and burdens as well. You need to be equipped to serve, to give, not to be asking from your spouse. It's too much to ask them to feel that loneliness in your heart. It's not too much for God. His love is strong enough to fill your heart, to fill the deep longing and the deep need that you have in your heart. And so the review question here: have I devoted my heart in undistracted devotion to Christ, both wholly in both body as well as spirit? Undistracted, focused, not drawn astray, but focused on God's purpose for my life in devotion to sit quietly before God. Holy, that means sanctified or pure, both in my actions as well as in my heart and purpose, my spirit in life. By way of closing, I invite you to read together with me 2 slides worth, which is taken from verses 29 through 31. A reminder that the time is short, that Jesus' coming is imminent, and in light of that, we need to not be consumed with the things of this world, including marriage, but we need to pursue God above all else. Let's read this together. What I mean, brothers and sisters, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they do not. Those who mourn, as if they did not. Those who are happy, as if they were not. Those who buy something, as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of the world, as if not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. Pursue God with undivided devotion. Let's bow and pray. Gracious Heavenly Father, Lord God, we cry out to You from the depths of our heart with all of our emotion, all of our burden, and all of our longing. We cry out to You knowing that You are the only one who can fully satisfy the desires of our hearts. You know us and understand us. You see us right where we are right now. You see the singles, those maybe who are desperately longing for a relationship, longing to be married, longing to have that loneliness or that void filled. And You see them and care for them very desperately right where they are. And Your love is sufficient, is more than enough, to care for them and to provide for them, and for some of them even to equip them for their future marriage. You see the marrieds, that we have a calling from You. Help us, Lord, to view our marriage with a holy sight, a holy viewpoint, that our marriage, the purpose is not to satisfy our own needs, but to be a testimony of Your covenant love in purity, in duty, in Your authority, to be devoted to You and devote our families to You. We pray, Lord, for those who are hurting and sorrowful, who have had broken relationships and broken hearts. And You know and care for them deeply. And You bring restoration and healing. You bring hope for a better tomorrow because Your love conquers all. Your love is greater than all of our sorrow, all of our pain. Help us, Lord, to be undivided in our devotion to you, to sit quietly at your feet, to experience your love, to obey you in all that you ask us to do, and to share your love with the world that needs to see this love. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Let us all stand and respond to God's love by declaring that God is supremely worthy to be praised.
Like a ring of solid gold, like a vow that is tested, like a covenant of old. Your love is enduring through the winter rain and beyond the horizon, with mercy for today. Faithful you have been, faithful you will be. You pledge yourself to me, and it's why I sing your praise. Will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. You father the orphan, your kindness makes us whole. You shoulder our weakness, and your strength becomes our